probably for a very long way. Just smoke. What's it like? What's it like in Denver? So when I take my first few calls here, I'm going to ask that everybody else hang up. Please don't call. Yeah, we are having an hour of open lines here. But I want a few calls from Denver first. All lines. This applies to all telephone lines. All of them. First-time caller, wildcard line, east of the Rockies, west of the Rockies, couldn't do it anyway. And the international line. All the lines are reserved just for people in the Denver area. So we can get some sense of what you're seeing there and feeling. And the man accused of plotting with Al-Qaeda to detonate a dirty bomb inside the U.S. was a close protege, apparently, of Osama bin Laden himself, traveling at his mentor's request, it says here, to meet with other terrorists and using the Internet to research how to build a radioactive weapon. So apparently he got on the Internet and just read how you do it. It's all on the Internet. They've got how to build an atomic bomb up there. So I'm not real surprised to find out they were using and are using the Internet probably to communicate and to find out how to make the bad stuff they need. In Israel, another bomber blew himself up. I was at a restaurant just north of Tel Aviv on Tuesday, killing one Israeli teenager, wounding eight other people. It's just another in the long series. A lot of people predicting that's what we can expect next are acts like this, homicide bombers. The astronauts wired up and bolted down a work platform Tuesday that will allow the International Space Station's 58-foot robot arm to roam across the orbiting outpost. An even more momentous event occurred later when the two Americans who moved out of the space station and into the space shuttle Endeavour broke NASA's space endurance record. Let's see, that would be 188 days, a 188-day, 4-hour mark set by Shannon Lucid in 1996 aboard Russia's Mir space station. There you are. McCartney getting hitched. Paul McCartney got married. Heather Mills married today in a remote Irish castle. That sounds kind of neat, huh? While fans and journalists throng the gates for a glimpse of the ex-Beatle and his new bride. The stock market, stock market, did you see today's figures down what, about, it was about 128 points for the Dow and about another 33.51 for the NASDAQ, bringing the Dow to 95.17. NASDAQ down to 14.97. So the economy, boy, the economy, it's not doing very well at all, is it? Listen, I've got a UFO photograph for you on the website. It's up there right now, and it comes from this person who writes, long-time listener to the show, never been a caller yet, as I never had much to contribute until now. This past Sunday, the attached photo was taken not knowing that the object in the sky was there. Right after the photo was taken, I mean, just seconds after it was snapped, everybody turned around as a lady in the background who's pointing at the UFO started yelling hysterically. She kept saying, did you see it? Did you see it? What the hell was that? But everyone thought she was nuts because none of us saw anything. No one even bothered to ask her what she saw. We all thought she was just some sort of lunatic. Well, today my friend emailed me the picture that he took of us, and I thought my heart was going to jump out of my chest. It was pounding so hard. There behind me is a woman who was yelling. She's pointing up to the sky, and there's what appears to be a saucer-shaped UFO right where she's pointing to. And boy, is he right about that. It absolutely is, or appears to be, a flying saucer. And I must say, a pretty good one at that. So, take a look. There it is. And you can tell it's moving very quickly. And let me tell you a little more about this photograph, all right? He hopes it'll be posted on the website. He says, none of us really want to give out our full names at this time. We printed all this up on the website. We have never done anything like this before and don't want our names all over the papers or anything and have no idea what other harm could come from this. So for now, is it okay for us to remain semi-anonymous? Well, we thought, of course, it's okay. But, you know, see, in the picture he sent us, he didn't eliminate the faces in the picture. And we thought, well, you know, how do we know we have permission to put everybody's photograph up there? So we blotted out the picture of the young lady. He didn't do that. We did. But quite clearly, above her and beside a phone pole, giving it some distance, appears to be a saucer moving quite quickly for whatever shutter speed, you know, he was using. Who knows? Appears to be moving quite quickly, and it certainly does seem to be a flying saucer. That's all you could call this, flying saucer. So if you want to see it, it's up there right now at artbell.com. Go to artbell.com, my website, under What's New, Paul's UFO. We've also got some pictures of the solar eclipse as it occurred the other day. Some really cool pictures, actually, of the solar eclipse. Really neat stuff. Boy, people are getting really good with cameras, you know it? I've got some more news on that smallpox story. You remember the smallpox story from last night? Seems so unbelievable, right? What are they talking about, smallpox? Smallpox was supposed to be eradicated in the entire world, right? But could there be smallpox in Pakistan? Well, in a moment, more. Well, last night we heard about the possibility of smallpox in Pakistan. Now, that we're talking Captain Trip stuff here, folks. Smallpox was thought to be completely eradicated from the human race with only a few samples on hand at the CDC or wherever they keep this kind of thing, and they were even in great debate about whether to destroy them or not. Well. Listen to this. Pakistan's major English-language daily newspaper has reported what it calls a, quote, smallpox epidemic, end quote, that is rapidly spreading in the Pakistani province of Swabi, S-W-A-B-I, a development that, if true, raises grave concerns about global health and bioterrorism. Neither the Centers for Disease Control nor the World Health Organization has confirmed or denied the lone report, although the highly communicable and fatal disease was indeed officially eradicated from the world in 1977. In recent months, the threat of a smallpox bioterror attack has raised new questions about who might have access to the virus, how it could be used as a deadly weapon against large population bases. According to the Pakistan Dawn story, quote, a large number of children have suffered from smallpox, but the authorities concerned have failed to take any action to prevent this disease or immunize the people against it. The story adds, a health official said that the dilemma of the people was that they were not aware of the danger aspects of this ailment, as the children suffering from it have neither been kept in isolation nor properly treated. When contacted by WorldNet Daily, the Dawn Bureau chief at Peshawar said he stands by the story. He said, I assume it is correct. This is the first major story on this disease. He said, to his knowledge, no other media organization has yet picked it up. You're the first to call about it, he said. The story also appeared in the paper's hard copy version in Pakistan. Don says no government officials have contacted the paper to dispute the story, and the reporter had in fact spoken to an official from the government's health department. Rebecca Harding, of the World Health Organization's press office knew nothing of it, but was eager to look into it. A spokesperson for the Centers for Disease Control said he hadn't heard anything from official sources about any outbreak. We did get some anecdotal reports, said the CDC's Llewellyn Grant. So, there you go. Now, smallpox. If that's true, let's think about that a little bit. Smallpox. Deadly, deadly smallpox, said last night's guest. Perhaps hemorrhagic smallpox. And where is it appearing? In Pakistan. And who's in Pakistan? Al-Qaeda. Now, what do they want to do to us? Kill us. So, is it so outrageous to presume that what we might be seeing here is a test? You know, what's killing a few of your own people to make sure that something works? So, I'm pretty concerned about this story. I mean, in the end, what we can all hope is that it's some other kind of pox. And that there's some not even deadlier form of it, as in hemorrhagic smallpox. Yikes. Listen, coming up in the next hour, boy, are we all in for it. Nancy Leader is going to be here. And Nancy Leader runs Zeta Talk, I guess, and claims to be an enhanced contactee who speaks telepathically with aliens from Zeta Reticuli. She says the Zetas have revealed to her information about life on other worlds, the ET origins of the human species, that would be us, the Zeta-human hybrid breeding program, its reasons and methods, political science of the cosmos, who is who, the rules of engagement, protocols, the Council of Worlds, time travel, the nature of human, or rather of alien visitation and human recall of the events, contact techniques, origins of pyramids and the Sphinx. I mean, it goes on and on and on, and we're going to be talking. Everybody has wanted to talk about Planet X. And as you know, we've had a number of guests now on Planet X, and so it makes sense to have tonight a Nancy Leader on from Zeta Talk. They've been on this Planet X thing for a long time. So we'll see what she has got to say. Planet X might be Nibiru. It might be the planet that is mythically thought to come back every X number of years, getting either very close to Earth or sometimes not so close to Earth, you know, depending on the cycle. But when it comes really close to Earth, really bad things happen. I mean, after all, look at Mars. Mars, we now know, has all this water. Oh, my gosh, it has oceans of water. But it's all frozen, most of it underground, unless you're near some volcanic activities, frozen. Because the atmosphere's all gone. Now, one of the things that... This is just something for you to contemplate a little bit. One of the things that could do to Mars what apparently was done... Remember, as planets orbit, we're right next to Mars. Mars is closest. So if this 10th planet makes a swing... It might make sense that occasionally it would cut it close to Mars. Now, you know, if you had something literally graze your atmosphere, that would, I'm not a planetary scientist, of course, but I think most would agree that would be enough, depending on where, how close it came, to literally strip the atmosphere off the planet, boiling away the water, freezing the water, instant freeze, whatever. That is one thing that actually could do the trick. I mean, we always sit here and we puzzle about Mars. Well, what the hell happened? A good reason to wonder about what happened to Mars is we live here on Earth, right next door, so to speak. And if it can happen there, it can happen here. And if there really is a 10th planet, or a burned-out ton or whatever it is they think is out there. And, you know, as you know, there's been some late substantiation that there is something out there with scientists say they believe they have, in fact, discovered a body out there. Big planet, burned-out sun, they're not sure. But something lurks out there. I haven't heard any mainstream news say it might be headed this way. But that's what we've got tonight's guest on for. Anyway, the first few calls I want to take are going to be from Colorado, and then we'll open it up for everybody. And for Colorado, I thought we would dedicate this song in great hopes. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
I bid you good evening. As I mentioned a moment ago, I think we're going to first take a few calls from the Denver area, where a really, truly terrifying fire is underway. 80,000 acres burned so far, and threatening populated areas at that. The smoke is being seen by satellite states away, many states away. Coming right up. All right, straight to the lines. I want to take a couple calls here from Denver, Colorado, where this horrible thing is going on. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Heather from Denver, listening on KHOW at 6:30 a.m.
Of course. How's it going there? I mean, what do you live in what part?
I'm in the northern suburb of Denver, but the smoke has been just amazing everywhere. It's like you're looking through some kind of golden filter from the sun. Everything has a funny cast to it because of all the smoke it's being, the sun is moving
through. Can you also smell it?
Smell it, taste it, breathe it. I think everyone's got a bad throat, you know, scratchy throat from having been outside and trying to breathe any of this. It's pretty phenomenal. On Sunday it was the worst. I don't think you could see even a mile, and that's not typically normal for us. And the smoke, it was like being out at a campfire, and it was pretty indescribable on Sunday. We've had some breeze that have moved things around over the last couple of days, but it's still there. You can't look very far. You can't see the mountains. It's pretty amazing.
Let me ask you this. There's a big controversy that always rages about this, and some scientists say, look, you've got to have these kinds of fires.
Yeah, it's supposed to be normal.
You know, that this is just a reaction to, I don't know, too much forestry, too much dry times. It's a natural cycle of nature, and there are even people who suggest, let it burn, let it burn.
Well, I don't think things have ever been quite this dry in anyone's record keeping. And
I think you're right.
It used to be a couple of years ago, at least in my memory here in Colorado, it wasn't quite as aggressive fighting some of these fires. I think after what happened in, was it New Mexico around Los Alamos?
Yes.
Yes. I think that they've taken a whole new tactic, and boy, are they aggressive. They go after it with everything they can. It's just, it's so blasted dry, and we've got amazing winds around here usually, and the one that is 30 miles as the crow flies southwest of Denver near Castle Rock, that one is just a terror. It's just eaten up everything. It's just astounding. And
well,
that supposedly was a campfire.
I personally believe this is a sign just of our changing weather. That's all it is. I mean, they said snowpack, and they,
Well, we didn't have any snowpack.
No snowpack, I know.
It just has been so thin.
This was part of the report the president disavowed, but it came from his own, his own administration. And that's exactly what they said. And this hit me right in the eye when it said no snowpack. Very little rain, almost no snowpack.
Oh, yeah. And we're all around here, those of us who are of that mindset, are trying to, think rain, for 5 minutes every hour, hoping against hope that we get a little aid from this. We've got about 4 or 5 fires going. We've got one that's in an old coal seam. We've got places in the mountains where they have been coal mining in the past.
Right.
And previously fires have started in these coal mines, and they continue to burn year-round, year after year. And there's one near, it's the Hot Springs right there as you turn off of I-70 headed for Aspen. And there's been a coal fire that's been burning up in there for years, and it finally was so dry it just got rekindled by that very old coal fire.
Well, we all have something to worry about. If everything changes, I suppose the areas of the mountains that are now forested could be virtually deforested through events like this.
Well, we're definitely
the place I live in here, which is already a desert with very high temperatures in the summer, could conceivably become unlivable.
Yeah, maybe kind of along the temperatures that the coast of India suffered earlier this year with 120 degrees and people dying right and left.
Maybe everything.
Pretty awful.
Maybe it's all moving north. In other words, it's really all moving north. The warmer temperatures are going north, and pretty soon Canada is going to have a very much milder climate.
Well, it sounds like it in terms of the Arctic, too. I read an article about the Eskimos being totally unfamiliar with the kind of climate they're getting. And
The Inuit, I believe, yes.
Yes, and they don't recognize the seasons, and the hunting is completely,
for
them.
You're dead on.
They've never seen it.
I've got a whole story, a big story on that. I appreciate your call. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Mark.
From Denver. That's right. The Inuit. They're saying they don't recognize at all what's going on. The foliage, the animals, nothing is acting right. So that means something. All of this means something. Even if a lot of people in the administration would have you believe that it doesn't mean anything, it does. It's changing. It's changing in front of our eyes. A wild card line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay here, sir. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. My name's Kate. I'm calling right outside of Denver area. It's in Lakewood. And, I just from my limited perspective here in Colorado, although I've been following global warming since I was young, since I was 14 years old, I kind of jumped on to that whole issue. But I can say just right here in Colorado that definitely the weather has changed, that the winters have become more mild, and
yes,
that the summers have gotten hotter. Back in 82, we had that, these amazing snowstorms that would happen every once in a while, and you could count on at least a couple of snow days for school. those days.
Yeah, there's a big loss. How old are you now?
Oh, I'm almost 30 now.
Almost 30. You still,
yeah,
but you still remember those snow days real well, huh?
Well, yeah, and well, little details like that that I pick up on from my limited perspective out here.
You're right about
and
that.
And the thing about it is I have watched the weather change not only in Colorado but across the country. There's been events that have been anomalous.
Yeah.
And the thing that blows my mind with these wildfires, especially right now when they're so close to home, is not so much that the weather is changing, but how vacuous it is in the media, that it's almost a taboo word to say global warming.
I know.
I called in to a radio show, and I talked about some of this, and the host almost acted offended that I brought this up.
Yes, I know.
I'm not a doomsdayer. I'm not saying that if indeed what we're witnessing is global warming, that it's gonna be Armageddon. I'm not a Chicken Little. I'm just simply saying we need to discuss it.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Look, the odds are talk radio's dominated by conservative ideology. You know, a lot of it very strong. And it tends to follow the party line, which basically is that there is no global warming. And the reason they have that line is because it's the money interest. And if there is global warming, it's going to mean that we have to do things that would change the way conservatives think of the economy. Do you follow me? So it's like you're stabbing them in the heart when you say that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you get that reaction, you see.
Well, I mean, if they have such a stranglehold over the media, which, I mean, it's scary to think that. I would hope that there'd at least be some infusion of ideas that would be counter to that.
It's beginning to change.
There
are more and more stories now by all kinds of mainstream scientists who, you know, eventually these political folk who are taking a certain stand, based not on scientific knowledge but on political ideology, they're going to have to look out and say, well, gee, look at that, it has changed. They'll still be arguing, and it doesn't matter to me whether it's a natural thing or a man-made with the hand of man or both, probably both. It's happening, and we need to adjust to it.
Well, the lack of discussion is almost becoming laughable to me. you have literally, it's almost as bad as, you know, you have the house on fire and people are out on the patio, playing. It's almost becoming preposterous.
There was something about fiddling whilst Rome burns, wasn't there?
Exactly.
Yes.
And I'm one person. I've been pretty reticent on the issue for quite a few years, but I think it's pointless for me to be that way now.
Let me put it to you this way, sir. There's politics, and then there's reality and the truth, and the two are not always the same. In fact, actually, the two almost always are in opposition, particularly with the truth part. Eventually the science will become overwhelming. It's on its way there now, rapidly, just overwhelming, and you know, it's the truth. I mean, everybody can see it, who cares to look. The changes that are going on, the droughts, the incredible changes in our weather. So, you know, but this caller's central point is dead on. You know, the lack of any public discussion about this is astounding. Now, on this only slightly positive side, there are a lot of mainstream articles starting to hit the presses that are giving some pretty dire warnings. But it hasn't caught up to mainstream discussion yet, and that's pretty much because of the politics. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, my name's Chuck. I'm calling right now from Colorado Springs, Colorado, but I live in Denver, and I can give you kind of an update on where the fire is and what's going on here.
Yeah, please.
Basically, the first caller was dead on. Sunday was the worst. Visibility was down to about a quarter of a mile. It was raining ash from the sky in downtown Denver.
Wow.
It was covering everything, basically. They told people with respiratory problems not to go outside. 911 was being jammed by calls. People
are the prevailing winds taking the smoke over Denver, or?
They were Sunday.
They were Sunday.
Changed
right.
A bit. Today it actually died down quite a bit. There's a haze that goes all the way up and down the Front Range right now that is prevalent everywhere from Colorado Springs up north past Denver and probably into Boulder.
Wow.
Some good news is the fire has slowed down a bit. It's no longer traveling at a mile per hour. Now it's going at a half a mile an hour.
Right, I got that. But satellites are taking pictures now. They're saying the smoke from it is going north into Wyoming, Nebraska, and now the Dakotas.
Yeah, the plume was 15,000 feet in the air.
Wow.
And I mean, planes and helicopters were having to fly around because they couldn't fly through it. The heat from the fire and all of that smoke coming into Denver on Sunday.
Yes, sir.
Sunday afternoon. Was actually causing small thunderstorms in Littleton and Inglewood, just south of Denver. It's a suburb of Denver.
That's amazing.
And cold air coming the opposite way was hitting the hot air coming off the fire and shooting moisture straight up, and it was raining in Denver.
That's incredible.
Right now, it's actually, well, as of 10 o'clock tonight when the news was on, it was actually raining up in Woodland Park at the site of the Hayman fire, and that's a little bit of good news for the people up there fighting it.
But that is good news.
It's not predicted to rain for tomorrow. All the thunderstorms we have coming through are at nighttime, and the winds have died down, and there's a little bit of moisture in the air, so that's got to be helping them. But tomorrow they're predicting high westerly winds, which is going to pretty much push the fire straight east.
Okay, well, what are your comments, if any, on the same thing we talked about with the last caller, and that is no snowpack or very little snowpack little moisture.
I sent you an email about it Sunday, actually, when it was really bad in Denver and I was up there. And, I mean, we're at 25-30% snowpack today in Colorado Springs, looking at Pikes Peak, which normally would be covered in snow. It's a 14er, you know.
Yes.
It normally would have snow on it at this time of year, and there's no snow at all on it. It's brown. And all of the mountains seem to be that way, too. I mean, there's no snow up there at all, pretty much. And it's killing us.
That will,
it really is.
That will change a lot of things.
And
people don't understand how much the snowpack means.
Well, you know, water from Colorado and from the rest of the Rocky Mountains basically gives water to the rest of the western half of the United States.
That's correct.
And when there's no snow here, there's no water there. And, you know, the places that are getting water right now are getting too much of it in the wrong way. Places like Minnesota where it's flooding.
Yep.
And we're not seeing any of it here, and we're not predicted to see any of it here, and it's real bad. So, I mean, this is just the start of it. Normally, fire season wouldn't start until next month, the month after that, and we've had the worst fire in Colorado's history already.
It's barely mid-June.
So we're looking at having a real bad season still. The Hayman fire did hit what was the site of another fire last year or the year before, I believe, and that has actually slowed it down because there's not really much to burn on one side of it.
All right.
So they're able to concentrate their efforts where they need to, but from what I've heard right now, they're just looking at trying to protect individual structures. They're not trying to stop the fire at all. They're just trying to get it to go around buildings and homes.
So we'll all pray that it does exactly that.
Well, and they actually, that other fire up in Glenwood Springs, the coal seam fire, closed down I-70 the other day for 3 or 4 hours.
Wow.
You couldn't go east-west because they had to close the interstate because of the fire. So it's pretty bad here right now.
If Colorado changed, and we could ask this of any city. I'm just asking it of you because you live there. But if Colorado changed and it became barren, and the weather changed so much that it became barren, sort of a mountainous desert.
Well, we'd have New Mexico, basically, here. Yeah.
Well said, sir. Thank you.
And it's looking that way more and more so. And normally this time of year, it would be green everywhere. It doesn't start turning brown until July or August. And right now, it's brown everywhere, except for where the evergreens are, and they're all burning right now.
So I wonder who gets Colorado.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a feeling there's going to be some real cheap property for sale here real soon.
look to the north. All right, thank you very much. There's a taste of Colorado for you folks. What's going on there? And it's part of the weather change. There's no question about it. But we all live in other words, believe it or not, climate affects almost everything you do. It affects water availability. It affects agriculture. It affects almost every single aspect of life. And if there becomes a permanent change or an accelerated change, it's not going to be the end of the world, just like that fellow said, but it's going to mean that different areas are going to become different things. And I suppose the southernmost parts of the U.S., which are perhaps semi-tropical now, will become tropical. I don't know. Just guessing that everything sort of moves north. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes, sir.
This is Chuck in Dolores, Colorado, Southwest Colorado, Four Corners area.
How you doing?
Mighty fine, thank you. We're the driest part of the state. Knock on wood, we're not burning yet. There's a fire over in Durango, though, near Durango. We had the Mesa Verde fires a few years back. One thing I've noticed, though, a definite lack of chemtrails since the fire started.
No, isn't that interesting?
Very. Now, wasn't it Russia that said that they could put the fires out over in Malaysia and Sumatra?
Yes, they offered to do it free the first time, they said, and then they would charge for it after that. They could create, they said, a cyclone. And, you know, you're raising another good point. Is somebody screwing with our weather?
Well, you know, Monsanto's buying up water rights. They're profiting from this. And they brought up
somebody
Terminator.
Will always profit from something, sir. And the people that figure out what's going to happen are going to be the ones that profit. Probably.
Well, I'm glad you're profiting from this. I've been listening to you since you were at Jackie Gons Plaza there.
That's a long time ago.
Well, sir, I used to call you and aggravate you about mad cow disease, and you used to say, oh, you're a wacko. Now we've got CWD here in the elk and the deer herds, all because of game farms.
We do.
And the prion has crossed over, you know.
I don't think I said you were a wacko.
Well, sir, something to that effect.
I don't think so. Anytime from the very first moment we've talked about CWD here on the show, I've always taken it very seriously.
This was 10 years ago, longer than that, but back when...
Don't remind me. I know how old...
I'm sorry.
I know how old I am.
I'm just saying, Art, they're
Maybe you were a wacko back then, and...
I probably was.
You're all right now.
They're killing all the deer.
Maybe they're killing
the ones with that are resistant.
Sir, the hour is over. I gotta go. Say ciao.
Okay. Ciao.
Ciao. We'll be right back.
Up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. All these things in our memory is hard, and they use them to help us to take this place, I'll have to, just for me.
take a ride? Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Well, you're definitely in for a ride tonight. We have had endless requests for a program on Planet X, another program on Planet X, and so it shall be. And comes now Nancy Leader. Nancy Leader is a computer professional who left the West Coast in 1999 to move to the Midwest. She claims to be an enhanced contactee. We'll ask about that. Enhanced. Who can speak telepathically with aliens from Zeta Reticuli. Nancy says the Zetas have revealed to her information about life on other worlds, the ET origins of the human species, the Zeta-human hybrid breeding program, its reasons and methods, political science of the cosmos, who is who, the rules of engagement, protocols, the Council of Worlds, time travel, the nature of alien visitation and human recall of the events, contact techniques, origins of the pyramids and Sphinx, the Nibirans, I guess that's what they are, those from Nibiru, right? Nibirans, from the 12th planet, also known as Planet X, and its imminent return and much more. Nancy wrote Zeta Talk after awakening late in life to her contactee status. She's also the web mistress of two websites, Troubled Times and Zeta Talk. Nancy's mission is to educate the public on the coming Earth changes and what to do about them. That's what's coming up in a moment. Well, all right, here is Nancy Leader. Nancy, where are you?
I'm in Wisconsin, Art.
Wisconsin. Wisconsin. There's been a lot of weather stuff going on up there.
There's been a lot of weather stuff going on everywhere.
Yeah, that's right. I don't even know where to begin. It sounds like you've got the answers to all the world's big questions with you. Is that fair?
That's frequently how Zeta Talk is described. Yes, it brings a lot of pieces of the puzzle together. I hear that every day on email.
Huh.
People have said, they look at the weather changes, and maybe they've had some subconscious knowledge, some dreams.
Yes.
They've been listening to the buzz out on the news, you know, what kind of explanations they're getting. They feel uneasy. It's not coming together. They get to Zeta Talk and the pieces come together. Basically, our Earth has a history of periodic cataclysms, wandering poles, frozen mastodons found up in the Arctic Circle, and they've got green grass in their tummies. None of this seems to make sense. You know, the scientists don't have an explanation. And we've had such rapid changes since 1995 in the weather, the poles are melting, Antarctica is falling off in chunks and floating away as ice cubes, and the government just seems to kind of
North Pole. North Pole is melting, too.
Yes, it is, from underneath.
They're going to have a new ocean there. They're not going to be able to hide under the ice anymore because of invading ice. And you know, still, I had a caller last hour. We were talking about these weather changes and the fire in Denver, and the caller last hour said, and nobody's talking about it.
Yes. This is the type of thing that has people uneasy. Not the fact that it's happening, but the fact that everyone seems so nonchalant about it. We're hearing about everything else in the news, and that's actually a symptom of something real. For instance, back in, March of 97, there was a mass sighting of a mothership in Arizona. And both USA Today and I think it was Fox News or CNN, a couple of different news media chains, reported it 3 months later, and
yeah,
sort of almost on the same date, 3 months later.
Oh, you're talking about Phoenix Lights.
Yes, exactly.
That's exactly
now,
correct. I had it on the night it happened. We had nothing going but. That's all we talked about for days. And then 3 months went by, and then, boom, it was like someone threw a switch, and
yes,
it was a big report. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
It's not so much the news. It's the delay that people should look at. Why the delay and why the synchronized reporting in the major media? That's an evidence of a cover-up. If there's a cover-up, it's evidence that somebody does not want you to know about the alien presence. And it's similarly, why aren't we hearing about the weather changes and the poles melting and the like? There are more active volcanoes now than in the memory of man. You know, they're activating. Earthquakes are on the rise. They're actually underreported. The Richter is underreported and the frequency.
Yeah, Nancy, you could control the American press, I guess, if you could control one or more of the news services in this country. Then you might be able to control stories. You might. It's hard to imagine. You know, the American press is so big. I mean, take me, for example, right?
Yeah.
I go on here, and so far I'm still alive, right? And I do reporting on this kind of thing all the time. And I've never once had anybody come to me in any official capacity and say, hey, listen, you know, that, you know, guys in suits, that kind of deal. I've never had that. So it's kind of hard to imagine. It would have to be done from the very top.
Yes.
And that's what you're saying is true, I guess, huh?
Yes, actually, I haven't researched this myself, but I think the major news, newspaper chains, TV chains, they're owned by very few people. Wealthy individual. Murdoch is one, is he not?
Rupert, yeah.
Yeah, and, all right, I guess I had that wrong.
Rupert Murdoch is his name.
Yeah, there we go. And if you have that person putting certain people into positions where they're editorial and giving them the word on what can and cannot get on the news, then you've got it top down, yes.
Well, then, think about the Phoenix Lights for a minute. Do you suppose whoever it is who controls all this was like sitting around some big room one day and they decided, well, you know, time for a mass sighting story. Let's pick up on that Phoenix thing that happened and roll with that tomorrow. It's like, it's almost like that was done, huh?
Yeah, but I don't think that they wanted a mass sighting story. I think what it is that they're sitting on a massive cover-up, and it's very difficult. It's a very difficult horse to ride.
Uh-huh.
And they are torn by conscience, Art. There's so much that they feel that the American public should know, needs to know, and they're balancing this by how they'll react if they did know. And you can imagine those arguments in those smoke-filled rooms.
I can.
Yeah? Now, for instance, Planet X, if, in fact, our...
Before we even start on Planet X, I think it's very important that we understand how you're getting the information you're about to start talking about. Is that fair?
Yep.
You claim to be an enhanced contactee. What in the world is in that?
It actually means that I've had a bit of Zeta Reticula DNA inserted in a certain part of my brain, which deals with telepathic communication.
And when do you maintain this occurred?
I think it was in my late 20s. I do recall, retroactively, I do recall, coming into the house after being out in the woods for a bit, and yes. When I did meditation, I got the whole story outlined to me. I was in a chair with my wrists clasped and three different Zeta faces in front of me asking me how I felt. Did I feel nauseous? Did I feel this way?
Do you remember, you said faces, do you remember their appearance?
Oh, very well. As a matter of fact, the way they smell, the way they feel.
Let's hear it.
They're very thin, and they're much thinner than people can imagine. Their bodies are like fence posts, and their arms are more like broomsticks, really. They have very long, fingers with hard nails. Their thumb is more like a bump, you know, in the palm than a digit.
Really?
And they have very heavy, clumpy-looking feet. They're, you'd think that they didn't have lungs because their trunk is so rigid, but they have, bellows. Lungs, one opens and the other closes, and they work in synchronity.
Wow.
Very huge heads. The top of the head is a little lighter than the rest of the body. High cheekbones, huge eyes. Little tiny mouths that are just a slit, basically, and the nose is straight up and down. From the front, you just see a couple little nostrils, perhaps, but from the side view, it's straight up and down, about as big as your little finger. They really have beautiful faces.
Well, perhaps that's subjective. I mean, you have DNA, so you're probably partisan, huh?
Well, I've known them for a long, long time,
there
and I'm sure, I don't know if you believe in reincarnation or not, but I'm sure that I knew before I was born that I was to have this role potentially. The Zetas have said that 19 out of 20 contactees who have volunteered to do a service actually come through and you know, make it.
I actually lean toward reincarnation.
Do you agree?
Lean toward would be
the
phrase.
Yeah, yeah. Because the first time that I was encountered in this body, I was a little girl of about 8 years old, and I met them down in the woods, and they were just the little ones. The Zetas come in various, they had actually about 127 different varieties of them. And this was the little ones, about 3.5 feet tall, and they leaned out behind the trees, and like deer or rabbits that you might encounter in the woods. And they kept saying to me, well, telepathically, they kept communicating, which is how they communicate to contactees.
Yes.
Do you know why we're here? Do you know why we're here?
They're asking you.
Yes, and I think they were trying to get me to search my soul, and because my soul knew why they were there.
How far is Zeta Reticuli from Earth?
You know, I don't even know. It's
in light years. I know it's one of the closer star systems. It might harbor life, scientists say, and I know that it can only be seen from the southern hemisphere, not up here. But it's not that far out as things go.
Well, actually, distance is like a wink, the way they travel. So
you're not the only one to talk about Zeta Reticuli. John Lear, many people early in the UFO modern times talked about the Zeta Reticulans.
Yeah, and Benny and Barney Hill. That very famous case.
Yes.
1963, and Betty was given a constellation, which she drew a picture of.
Yes.
And later, someone in Mensa in Minnesota, I believe a woman, said, that's Zeta Reticuli.
That's right. And I talk frequently to Betty Hill, and, you know, she really would like to come on the program, but she really can't stay up late. And so I just keep plugging away.
Yeah.
But she's got a serious story to tell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's a honey, and stuck to her story and was very detailed. Unless you're precise and detailed, that kind of a story wouldn't have weight.
Well, that's for sure, and it's hard enough for that kind of story to have weight anyway. However, it's fairly easy for me to imagine, Nancy, that it's real, that there is life out there. Anybody who looks out there and thinks there isn't life isn't thinking much.
That's right.
In my opinion. So there could easily be life. Could it have contacted us? Yes. Could it have contacted you? Maybe so. How sure are you that all of this was not in your head?
Well, there's a difference when you have a suppressed memory.
Yes.
And you're recalling it. Actually, the way it works is during visitations, they record this in your subconscious. They turn off your conscious. We have two different brains.
Right.
Normally, you and I are recording in both. The subconscious, even though it's given a bad name by the psychological field, is where everything is recorded and nothing is forgotten. The conscious is where we play games. We selectively remember what we want to, and we change the facts.
Yes.
So you record it in your subconscious, and you turn off. It's a chemical switch that they do to people. I'm not sure how it's done exactly, but you don't consciously remember. So when you're recalling, sometimes that starts out with dreams, a dream state, or you meditate, or you can be hypnotized. You get very relaxed, and your subconscious is given the stage. You are actually recording the memory for the first time in your conscious. There's a difference between daydreams and things that you imagine and the recall of an actual memory. There are smells. There's touch. There's sound.
Do you remember the way they smelled? You do. How?
Yeah. Well, their breath, particularly, it's very acrid. It's such that you'd sniff it and you'd jerk your head back almost like you'd, I don't know, sniffed sulfuric acid or something. I don't know how to equate it to acrid.
Okay. Anything else special about them? I mean, you physically described them very well, very well. What is their temperament like? How would you describe them? Are they gentle, nice beings, or are they like us, a little good, a little bad, or what?
Well, all of the above. And there's poets among them, and generals, and scientists, and engineers.
Hitlers?
I suppose musicians, they do say they enjoy music, and what they have genetically engineered themselves so that they don't have a digestive tract that functions anymore. They absorb through their skins and their lungs. I've seen them. They took me to a home that they had in the Gobi Desert within the mountains, and they were laying face down, floating in clear tanks.
What?
You know, and
so they have thrown off the joy of eating?
Yeah, and they manufacture their own nutrients in the lab.
Well, that's probably why their mouths are shrinking.
Yeah, they have, and I think if they ate, they'd be in trouble. I don't think they have a functioning digestive tract anymore.
Yeah, better not eat then.
Yeah.
And you found that you went to a, you're giving me a lot at once here. You how did you get an opportunity to go to a home?
Well, from 1995 when I started to consciously recall, and this actually happened after 1995, it was kind of getting ready for the communication role. ZetaTalk has actually been more successful than anyone anticipated. And when it started to really take off in 1995, I was given a lot of experiences that I hadn't been given previously to stock me up, you know. So this was a way of describing their life, you know, how they're living on the face of the earth while they're talking to people. So I was taken there and shown, this was like little houses that they had built inside of a cavern along the sides, so like adobes, you know, and their spas, green things hanging and growing. They say they listen to music while they float and renew themselves, and they listen to the vibrations coming through the water and the like.
Well, what are they doing here?
It's kind of like the Peace Corps. You know, people say, well, they've come to eat us or take us over or whatever.
Yeah.
They're here on a very few life forms or spirits that have evolved to a higher, you know, level and that are intelligent enough, you know, to be able to do space travel, go out and around. Mostly they stay on their planet or in their societies and educate themselves and amuse themselves and learn how to socialize with each other or whatever. But this is the Peace Corps, and it's not pleasant for them. They can't go back. Their planets have more of a gravity pull. I've seen a Zeta jump.
You mean once they've adjusted to our environment,
yes,
they can't go back?
That's right. Yeah.
I see. Nancy, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. Nancy Leader is my guest. She's talking about people, no, not people, aliens.
I've been where the eagle flies, rode his wings across olden skies, kissed the sun, touched the moon, but he left me much too soon, his ladybird.
This, of course, is Coast. We'll be right back.
Dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Well, interesting. Nancy Leader sounds very, very articulate to me. This is one of those things where some people are going to sit out there and say she's crazy as a loon. But then there's one other possibility, and that is, of course, that she is not. And that this is accurate. And by the way, Zeta Reticuli is about 39.5 light years from our sun. 39.5 light years. So that would mean 39 and one half years at the speed of light to get here. And presumably they would travel faster than that. They certainly are in a likely place for life. There's no question about that. Very likely place for life, and a very possible distance to arrive here as well. So the other possibility is that that Nancy Leader is straight on, and you know, you've got to think that based on that possibility, well, the kind of answers she's going to have tonight on a lot of questions that we'd all like to know, that it's absolutely worth a listen. So much ground to cover, so little time. Nancy Leader of Zeta Talk is my guest. Nancy, welcome back.
Hi.
You understand, don't you, Nancy, that some people, you know, are going to regard this as she's crazy as a loon, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's frequently thrown out there. She's schizophrenic. She hears voices in her head. Well, I don't hear voices in my head. I get a telepathic concept that I put words to. And also, I don't have the profile of somebody who is disorganized.
You don't sound like it.
Yeah. Michael Lindemann, Zeta Talk actually started in his online chat group in American Online early 1995. His statement was, it is cogent and consistent. There's 1,300 pages out there right now that have been written at separate times in responses to questions, interactions since 1995. And there's a consistency that I actually forget what I've written frequently. You know,
all right, well, let's talk, because there is so much that you have written. So many questions to answer. You say that they gave you information about life on other worlds, and that's something we all want to know about. We look at the night sky, stars everywhere, planets going around.
Yeah.
Life almost. I mean, look at Mars. We just found out about the water, volcanism beneath Mars, and you've got life. And even as bad as Mars is right now, and we'll talk more about Mars, but I mean, life on other worlds, is it? What did they say about it? Is it common? Is there a lot of life? What?
Yes. It's actually much more common than we think, because a lot of different worlds that we wouldn't even think could sustain life. But mainly it's because the universe is immense. And I've been introduced to various different life forms in what they call the life form orientation. But only those life forms that were carbon-based, basically, that would not be poisoned by coming for a visit.
Mm.
So there's life forms that they can't visit either, the Zetas. So we started out with a hominoid lineup, and they were pretty weird, you know. One of them looked like a horned toad. It's sort of like almost like a turtle's shell all over the body.
Mm.
And then we moved to different life forms. And most planets are water planets, the majority. So they end up being something like an octopus or a fish or a jellyfish or whatever. Then after that, you have some land-based. Most land-based planets evolve reptilians. In fact, we had on our planet Earth an intelligent reptile back in the days of the dinosaur. Not the biggies, but a smaller version. And they're frequently reused, worlds are life-bearing worlds. Very few are insect forms. I met one. It was one of my most difficult experiences because it looked like a giant cockroach as big as me standing up. I had a rough time with that. But they get even weirder than that. I mean, there was one that was like a huge amoeba, like a rug on the floor, and it moved in like pea green and curled around my ankles, and then I could communicate with it. But the one that caused me to faint was Beanbag Man.
Beanbag Man?
I actually created an animated graphic on my website in the world section, Life Forms. And it was like a huge bean, had no legs. I guess it kind of lurched around on a muscle on the bottom like a slug or something. And it had a fringe of little arms, dozens of them, with little pincers on the end and two huge eyes in the middle of the top. You know,
right.
Very nice fellow, actually. Came from a planet where they had swarms of bugs that would run over him. And as they did so, he would grab them in these pincers and toss them into his mouth.
Huh.
And he was green. His underside was kind of black.
And he's a bug eater.
A bug eater, but boy, a very nice fellow. But I fainted.
No, well, I don't blame you. I might do the same thing myself. So let me get this straight. They have brought these life forms to Earth for you to meet, or have they taken you somewhere to meet them?
No, I was definitely here and at the time. And I think that a number of people on Earth, a number of contactees, get these kind of orientations. That's so that when the time comes, they can speak to the issue, or they're not alarmed.
Well, why are they not? Nancy, why are they contacting you and others like you and not governments of the world or the United Nations or whatever we might imagine? Why?
Before, around the time of Roswell, 1950 or so, in fact, contacts were in the conscience of people. That's why in India there's a book called The Vedas that describes all these strange, those are real descriptions of aliens. Or in the past, they might have called them fairies in the woods or whatever, gnomes. Basically, it's the people of the Earth. They believe in, there is an administrative ruling of the universe. It's not just ad hoc. Anyone can come and do a mass landing and take over the planet. There are rules. There is a police force. We're considered a kindergarten. So the people that run the universe, every vote counts. It is not a hierarchy. You don't get a representative. You don't get a president or a CEO who dictates. You know, you don't get bribery going on. And so, therefore, they're reaching out to the true populace. The governments are assumed to be run, and quite often are, people who want to be in control, who want to have a lot of money, who don't necessarily have our interests at heart. And they would use...
Do you know whether they have attempted, whether they've attempted to contact our government?
Oh, well, they definitely contacted our government, and this, which is why MJ-12, which was very real. I can tell you many experiences I had with MJ-12. The reason it developed was just... we're due for a transformation. During the coming Earth changes, there's going to be a large die-off of the population of the world, and we are going to move into what Jesus described as the 1,000 years of peace, when he's going to return. Well, this is an analogy to say the good people are going to come. You know, it's going to be a home for good people. So there was a vote, which everyone pretty much knew which way it would go, as to whether the Earth should be a reform school for the bad guy or one of these very pleasant places, which 95% of worlds become. And, of course, we chose that route because the people on Earth are generally good-hearted folk and care about each other.
What do you mean, we chose that? Who specifically?
Every human on Earth with a reincarnating soul was allowed to cast a vote, and it was a true vote. And we voted to move in the direction that Jesus was describing was going to occur. You know, it's not 1,000 years of peace. It's endless peace on Earth, you know, of a very good... The bad guys are going to be hauled off to reform school. Genghis Khan, Hitler, you know, Saddam Hussein, away they go.
Reform school. Meaning some planet that has been designated so.
Exactly. And they must live with each other, which is what hell is.
Well, when are they going?
It's going to happen over a period of 100 years as they die off. And it's happening actually now. It's occurring where people die and their souls are incarnating or being taken away to incarnate in these reform schools. The good-hearted souls are reincarnating on Earth. You notice how many democracies are popping up?
Oh, yes. That is fair.
Yes, yes. And there's a change. There seems to be more truth out there.
However, Nancy, at the same time all of this is occurring, I agree with you. Consciousness is expanding. I talked about that with Gordon Michael Scowling yesterday. He said there's going to be a big break in that. But at the same time, you know, they're driving airplanes into buildings and threatening to poison us with radioactivity or biological terror. In other words, for every good thing you could name, I could name one negative thing that's occurring. And these are all occurring at the same time.
Yes, it's described as polarization on the increase. The bad guys that are going to be hauled off to reform school, and there's a certain number of bad aliens that can come. The rules are that human controls contact and communication with aliens. If you have a bad guy saying he wants to murder his neighbor or you know, and run off with his neighbor's wife, he's going to get a visit from a bad guy advising him how to do that. They're trying to get recruits to go with them to their worlds, and basically recruiting foot soldiers so they can be generals and the like. There's a polarization. They don't want to let go, you know. And also there's a moving to different camps. You have parts of the world like Scandinavia is becoming more and more socially democratic and the like. And you look at Africa and there seems to be some horrific practices of slavery and chopping off hands and misuse of people. So there's a polarization everywhere in governments. You can see it in our Democratic and Republican parties. I won't give away my political orientation, but there's the ultra-righters, you know, the hard-hitters, and there's people who say, what about national health insurance? There's a difference in the emphasis.
That's true. That's all true. But you're saying that ultimately, at a reincarnated soul level, there has been essentially a vote or a tally taken, and that we're headed to be eventually a good planet, but sometime between now and then, a lot's going to happen?
Oh, yes. It's a roll of 100 years. You get to live out your lifetime, and so you have to assume our lifespan and go out 100 years, and the world is going to be a very different place. But it's a process, and it will change region by region depending on regional readiness. When we have a passage of Planet X and we have another pole shift, everyone's life is going to be turned upside down. There'll be a lot of changes then.
Clearly, you talk about understanding. You ask these Zeta Reticulans, the origin of the human species. You mentioned Jesus a little while ago, and yet you maintain the origin of the human species is extraterrestrial, eh?
Yes, we've been genetically engineered, which is one reason we have this weird brain structure where we have the conscious and subconscious and the like. The missing link, nobody can find the missing link.
I know.
Well, it's either on the dark side of the moon or on some desert, little island somewhere that even might even be under the waves at the current time.
Well, I know you know Zachariah Sitchin, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Well, I do too, and I've interviewed him many, many times. And I understand exactly what he's saying about Nibiru and what our role was. Do you buy into that we were at one time gold mining slaves and we were created to mine gold? That's what Zachariah said.
Partially true. Gold mining slaves, yes. But the Zetas have said that the Nibiruans, who were actually at least 50% larger and stronger than us,
yes,
because their planet is 23 times the mass, and therefore the surface gravity pressure is about 1.6 or something like that.
So they'd have to be big by our
standards. They were bigger, and
yep,
they were running mining operations, but they did not genetically engineer us. They bragged. That what Sitchin is picking up is their bragging.
They're bragging?
Yeah. Well,
but they did genetically engineer us?
No. Not according to the Zetas.
Braggadocia. So who did? The Zetas?
Many different teams of genetic engineers. It's a many-step operation. You know, it didn't happen once. We didn't go from ape to Homo sapiens in once. It was stages. And they said they pick them up and they genetically engineer on a desert island or something, which is pleasant. I
mean, so they made it look like evolution.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it happened rapidly, and people say, where's the missing link? And they keep looking, and they can't find it. And, there's a lot of clues that something, it wasn't evolution alone. Apparently, the apes have 47 chromosomes, and we have 46, and there's just gaps, and there's things that...
So then, who specifically engineered us? You say it was a group effort of alien cultures?
Yeah, actually, whenever the time for genetic engineering comes, the various groups, and there's many, many of them, talk about who should be in charge of it. Actually, the reason we have a split brain, conscious and subconscious, is
yes,
because the engineers at that time were reptilian. And they wanted to pass forward our sometimes we're told we have a reptilian brain.
We do.
Yes.
A part of our brain is indeed reptilian.
Yes, yes. So that, and they don't all agree with each other. I mean, they're not all coming from one mindset. They definitely have differences of opinion.
All right. Listen, then we were engineered by sort of a panel. You know, a group of, that's just great. And then there's this Zeta human hybrid breeding program.
Yes.
Now, I've interviewed a whole lot of abductees over the years. Many, 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 Nancy, I can't tell you. And one common thread seems to run through all of it, and that is interest in our reproduction systems, interest in breeding with human beings. What do you know about all this?
Oh, a lot. I was actually a participant in the hybrid program.
Your telephone's breaking up. Are you on a portable?
I'm not. I'm on a landline. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, every now and then I'm just going to one of those things.
Oh, I think what it is I'm shifting it around in my hand, but I'll try not to do that.
Okay, so anyway, interbreeding.
Yes. Our next leap forward is happening, you know, and it has been happening for at least 50 years or so. And they're creating a hybrid between the Zetas and the humans, who are volunteers. They're not picked up and their eggs harvested and all this stuff involuntarily. They may describe it was a scary situation, but the Zetas point out going to the dentist and even getting married can be a scary situation. Many people feel traumatized by it and have mixed feelings. So, and they mix this together sometimes with, and they tend to follow family lines. And the reason for that is, I'm told, there's a weaving of the genetics and they may be missing a gene or two or need to strengthen something. And so they blend it together over a number of generations and that makes a trait stronger or it brings it through true. So, and there, it's multiracial. It's not Caucasian or et cetera. One of the reasons.
Why is there a need for an interbreeding program? I'm not clear.
There's not really a need for it. We're scheduled for the next leap forward. During this transformation time, it's not just that they're hauling the bad guys off to reform school, etc., but we're also going to be reincarnating into hybrid bodies with 400 IQs, and we will be eating. We will have the capacity to breathe in a bellows manner. We will have sex. We'll have big heads, big eyes, and we'll live very high tech.
Well, that doesn't sound, I guess, all that bad.
Well, no hair. We're going to be bald, you know.
No, I like hair.
Oh. Well, we're not going to have any.
Really?
No, they couldn't make it work.
Really?
Yeah, that's what they say.
A genetic misfire of some kind? I mean, what?
Well, they said they tried, and they're bald, and they're hairless, and they have been forever. And
well, then maybe they didn't try that hard. Maybe they're just jealous.
You're complaining. They showed me an example of some of their early attempts, and there was some hybrid that had one or two hairs sticking out of the top of his head.
I mean, I'm a fan of Crystal Gayle, and my wife was extremely long hair, and I love long hair, and bald.
Yeah, bald. And not big breasted either. I mean, we will have breasts, but not big-breasted.
What?
I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad tidings.
That's catastrophic tidings. Actually, we haven't even got to the catastrophic tidings. Stay there on the phone, because I want to examine your telephone a little bit and or redial the telephone number. We're getting a lot of clicks and crunches and bald. Bald? I don't know if I'm in for that. But the souls have voted already. So it's too late. No hair. Sex, but no hair. I don't know. I was hoping for better. The IQ of 400, that sounds good, huh? But bald?
Come of me while I look around for my
Mark Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
Bald. No hair at all. No hair at all. And then smaller breasts. You know, we've gone for war. We've gone to war and we've killed for less than that. Much less. I'm kidding. Sort of.
Once again, here is, oh no, actually she isn't there. I promised I'd call her back and forgot to do it. Got so involved in what I was doing. Let me do that right now and we'll see if we can get a, I had her change telephones is what I did. So, let's see if we can get her. We'll see if she's got a new phone and she's ready to rock.
I hope this is better.
Well, I don't know. We'll listen to it for a while. And,
yeah, and listen, if not, I'll go to a different room. This line got struck by lightning a couple days ago.
No, it's doing it like crazy right now.
I'm going to go plug into a different room.
Okay.
Can you give me about 30 seconds?
And call you back once again?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. All right.
Yeah, I can do that. What the heck? I can do that. What do you think of what you've heard so far? It's one of those things, as I said at the beginning, where you've either, you know, you've got to believe she's crazy as a loon. But she doesn't sound that way, does she? She sounds, other than the telephone trouble, rather well organized in my mind. Or the other possibility is that she is really doing, I'm dialing now, as she said. Everything is as she said, which means that you should listen because she might be right. Now, let's see if I can get through to her again. Here we go. Nancy?
Yes, hi.
Okay.
Hey, is this better, I hope?
No, I just heard it go. So, you know what? We're going to have to live with it, I guess.
All right.
It's actually on your line. Now, you don't have a whole other line there, do you?
I do, but it's used for DSL, and I can't switch to it. I'm going to have the phone company check this out because we did have lightning strike and it came through and blew my modem.
Oh, I'm telling you, you got big trouble on this phone line. This really is the pits, but we'll try and make it through anyway. All right, everybody will just have to put up with it. Sorry about that, folks. It's on her phone line. Where to go? Let's see. How about time travel? Is one of my favorite topics of all time, and you seem to know about time travel, or they have told you about time travel. What do you know?
Well, they've said that it's actually not the speed of light that is the limiting factor. And they've described magnetism and gravity as a particle flow, which is something I guess our human scientists are thinking about, the graviton and the like. There's actually two phases to gravity. One is the gravity pull, and the second is what they call a repulsion force. In essence, gravity is the particles floating into a body like the Earth. And then when there's pressure buildup, it shoots out like laser blasts, a huge amount of gravity particles, and it cuts right through our atoms and the like. It doesn't affect anything. It just passes so quickly out. Then it disperses kind of like a firecracker and floats slowly back down. It's the floating back down that presses us toward the Earth's surface. What they do when they do long-distance travel is they turn off the repulsion force of gravity and only use the attraction force, and they said it's a quick kiss.
A quick kiss. That's really interesting, and it also is in line with what a guest the other night who claims to have worked at Area 51 exactly had to say about the manner in which gravity is manipulated. At any rate, they're able to travel great distances in very short times?
Yes, and I have actually gone off the planet elsewhere in the universe with my children This is how I knew that MJ-12 existed years and years ago, because before we could get on this large spaceship that was going to take us off the surface of the planet, I had some people approaching with the Zetas, and I said, good heavens, they look like humans. And they had light tan uniforms, no insignia, and they were sort of apologetic and said they were told I would understand. And they just escorted me to the ship, and my son described it as something like customs, that they had to sign in and out, you know, with humans, MJ-12, if they took us off the face of the planet.
It's incredible. All right. We'll come back to all of this, I'm sure. I want to ask, we have to ask before it gets too late, about this Planet X. I've had thousands of requests to do shows on what's called Planet X, or some call it Nibiru. It's called many things. And, you know, I thought, myth, you know, even urban legend in the science fiction world, whatever you want to call it. And then ABC came out with a story recently that they have spotted something out there, way past the last planet, that could be a burned out sun or some large planetary body. And they're actually sensing and seeing something out there. And so that gives it sort of a little bit of credibility. And when I saw that ABC story, I went, holy smokes, you know, what if they're right? You aware of that?
Oh, yeah, I was aware of that story and a lot of others. Actually, we're being led to an understanding by the media and the scientists. NASA knows where it is, and they discovered it, the exact location, in 1983 when they sent up an infrared balloon above the atmosphere or way high in the atmosphere to peer out. And they've been monitoring it ever since. Our observatories are pretty well controlled, but in fact, the Zetas, my Zetas, have given the path of the way, if you view from Earth where you're going to find this, getting ready to make a passage through the solar system, as you've had Sitchin on, it makes this weird elliptical orbit and comes zooming through every 3,600 years or so.
So you agree with that timetable?
3,657 on average.
Okay.
And I don't agree with Sitchin's timetable. The Zetas have said it's going to come through late spring, early summer of 2003, less than a year away.
Less than a year.
People have cited this at the Zeta coordinates in early 2001.
All right, how do they find it? What are the coordinates?
Well, the coordinates are on the Trouble Times website. And if you go to my website, zetatalk.com, You right under the image of the Zeta face where it says Zeta Talk, there's a sentence that has several hot buttons. It says Planet X sightings. Click on that and you'll go there. And one of the things that you can find is the coordinates page where they give every 6 weeks or so they renew this. So in early 2001, we had teams of people that decided to go out and look, and somebody in France in the New Shuttle Observatory cited it. They were very excited. They said it's either a comet or a brown dwarf about to go foof, you know, about to...
That's right.
And it was very, very close, almost right on to the Zeta coordinates. Then somebody in Vancouver, Steve Havas, also found it and cited it. It was like a dim blob, and the people in the observatory that were assisting the public said, oh, look at that, you know, and it wasn't on the star charts. And then somebody went to Flagstaff. Now, after the first sighting in France, there was resistance in Flagstaff and Vancouver in that they had, like, scaffolding so you couldn't point the main telescope in that direction. But, and, you know, so you can read all about this if you go to the webpage, because these letters describing the resistance and the stalling they got, but in Vancouver, Steve actually got an admission from the head guy there that they know it, and they watch it, and they know where it is, and they watch it, but they're not allowed to talk about it. You know,
boy, we're closing in, Nancy, on not being able to do this because of this telephone connection.
Really?
This is killing me, because I really want all this. I'm going to try and hold you on, but if it gets much worse, we're going to have to reschedule this.
We could reschedule, and I could go to a different house. Use a different line altogether.
But you can't do that tonight, huh?
Oh, well, I'd have to go. It would take me 10 minutes to get there. I'd have to wake up my sister down the block.
wake up your sister.
Yeah, I could try yet a different room, but this is a different line going
through. No, this is really pretty bad, and I really, really, really want to get this material on. This is really important. 10 minutes I could give you if you think. I mean, I don't want to put you on the wrong side of your sister here. I tell you what we'll do. We could do it maybe at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah.
You want to try that?
Call this number first, and if I'm not able to work it out, well, let me think. I'll call your production guy at the bottom of the next hour. You're talking about another half an hour.
No, I'm talking about 8 minutes. Okay, we do it at the. I might be able to carry this through to the top of the hour, depending on how bad the phone line gets.
Yeah.
Darn. All right. Well, so anyway, 3,657 years, and you're being told that the return of Planet X is 2003.
Yes. Yes. Less than a year away.
Less than a year away, and the predicted. Passage with regard to Earth's orbit, how close is it going to come?
It's going to come between the Earth and the Sun, approximately 14 million miles away, and it causes a pole shift because this planet is a very large magnet like our world is, and it comes up from the south. It dips down to a 32-degree angle. It comes up from the south, and its north pole is approaching our south pole, but as it passes, it drags our south pole with its north pole, tipping our globe in space such that we have a pole shift. And the Zetas are predicting with great detail how this will happen and what this will mean. A lot of flood tides, very heavy earthquakes worldwide. The bulge off Brazil out in the ocean will become the new north pole, and India the new south pole. And the Pacific will greatly shorten. The Atlantic will greatly widen. And the people that along the coast are going to be flooded. You have to be 100 miles inland and a couple of hundred feet above sea level to avoid flood tides sloshing. If you move a bowl of soup quickly in the air, the soup stays where it is and the bowl moves. In other words, water resists motion because it can. All the volcanoes explode, 25 years of gloom after that. This does not mean the end of mankind by any means.
No, but having said that, how much of mankind will be around after such a change?
Well, actually, not everybody dies off in that change, but a lot of people just kind of give up and get depressed and sit around and or have injuries or get sick, allow themselves to get sick.
Well, give me some estimated numbers.
10% will survive.
90% die.
Yes.
You see, I enjoy people like you, Nancy, but, your cup of water is more than half full. I mean, you're very, upbeat, but to suggest, you know, I mean, to skip by the fact that 90% will die, that's,
Yeah, although, however, we have grim life on our planet now. We have starvation in Africa.
Yes, we do.
People go out because of cancer.
Oh, yeah.
And we have human slavery practices. So it's not like we live in a tea party in a rose garden. And there are things that a person can do if they wish to survive. Troubled times is just rift with discussions on what life will be and what steps to take. For instance, you should distill your water to get rid of the volcanic dust. Then you don't get lead poisoning. You can eat bugs, and as weird as that sounds, and earthworms, they're 82% protein. They grow in garbage, and actually bears get big and fat from bugs. You can eat weeds, and fishing will be good. We probably won't do real well with cattle because the vegetation suffers from the gloom. But the oceans will be lush because they'll pull up the carbon dioxide from all the volcanic explosions and utilize that in kelp. So ocean fishing will be very good. Yes, the poles will melt and the sea level will rise 675 feet. Eventually they'll refreeze.
Wait. The ocean level will rise 675 feet.
Boy, Russia disappears. I'm telling you, Siberia is lowland. And the Amazon basin, the Mississippi basin, underwater. But, you know, and it changes the life over. Life will become different. Like 100 years ago, you know, like the Amish live today, or third world countries do.
And the major part of our population, of course, is on the east and the west coast.
Yes.
And they're largely going to die.
Well, unless they leave the cities, yes.
So you recommend at least 100 miles inland.
And 200 feet up.
And at least 200 feet up.
And actually...
And even at that, with the changes going on, there'll be winds, won't there?
Hurricane force winds, but the little guy without any money actually survives better than the wealthy. All you have to do is dig a trench, lay down in it, and maybe a sod-covered board or a metal piece of tin, and you won't be affected by the earthquakes personally. Your possessions might be dashed to pieces, but... Or the hurricane winds either, which tend to just roll across anything flat. Tornadoes do too. They just go across anything flat.
Mm-hmm.
So Trouble Times and the Zeta Talk site, you can get to Trouble Times from the Zeta Talk site. I have pieced together what's called a safe locations document, which you can download as a PDF. And there's also a website if you can't deal with Adobe PDF, Adobe Reader. And the Zetas have responded to requests from people about how safe their location is and what to be concerned about.
Well, I'm going to be immediately selfish, and I'm going to ask you. I live at about 2,690 feet above sea level in the desert. Now,
what they've said about Nevada is, it will certainly not be flooded, but you're going to have a heck of a time growing crops afterwards. If you didn't get your groceries trucked in, Art, what would you eat?
Well, we'd starve.
And that's what they've said about Arizona, too, is that when you have the desert baked for so long, you can't break the soil up and get it going. That's your main problem in Arizona and Nevada.
All right, listen, Nancy, we're coming to a break here at the bottom of the hour, and what I want you to do is just go ahead and flat take off for your sisters. You say she's just down the block, right?
Yeah, this is very, very iffy. This is very, very iffy.
It's very iffy, huh?
Because she may not even let me do this.
Oh.
But so I'm almost thinking that we should reschedule because I could go down there and she could be grumpy about this. And
she could be, yeah.
Yes, very grumpy. She's very grumpy about this. She doesn't buy into this. Her basic statement is, why would anyone want to live then? And we should all just plan.
Okay, all right. Well, then just hold on. In some ways, I agree with her. I do. Absolutely. All right, let's think about this. I mean, you just heard what would happen, right? The coasts are gone. Water's inland everywhere. The pole has changed. The world is topsy-turvy. 9 out of 10 people are dead, which means 9 out of 10 people you know are probably dead. And so is a reaction like that, if that should occur, really abnormal, or is that normal? You know, like people, when you used to talk about nuclear war, right? Well, I just go out and throw my arms up and welcome whatever's going to happen. I don't want to live in the world that follows. We will be back.
Good God, y'all!
He knows all the chords, but he's strictly rhythm. He doesn't want to make it cry or sing. If any known guitar is off, he can't fall. When he gets up under the lights to play his thing, then Harry doesn't mind. If he doesn't make the scene, he's got a daytime job. He's doing all right. He can play the honky tonk like anything, saving it up Friday night with the Sultans.
Richard Bell in the the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Exactly what it is. My guest is Nancy Leader from Zeta Talk. We're talking about many, many things. Zeta Reticula, the aliens there that have contacted her. A vast experience with these aliens, and now Planet X and what they've had to say about Planet X. And this is such important material that I'm to just overlook the crackles we're getting. We're going to try one more connection, one more line that's downstairs in her house here in a moment. While you're listening to our little commercial break, we're going to see what we can get. I'm sure to play it by ear, because it's really important information, so stay right there. Once again, yet another location in the house, here is Nancy Leader. Nancy, welcome back.
Yeah, I think this line was not in the lightning strike. The other two phone plugs were, and I'm just hoping.
So far, so good. All right.
Great.
All right, so everybody wants to know about Planet X, and you're saying, I guess, number one, that they're saying this is inevitable, it's unstoppable, or...
Yes. Yes to all of that, and just like the sun rises, the powers that be, this is actually a schoolhouse for us. We're not going to be rescued from this because we're not rescued from starvation and cancer and brutality today. It's like if you wanted to evolve a bunch of kindergartners and find out what they're made of and let them arrive where they're going to go, you might put them in a room and just kind of let it slug it out. You know, after a while, you've got certain groups cooperating and caring for each other, and then there's the bully that everybody avoids.
Absolutely.
So that's what we're doing here, where it's a self-learning schoolhouse. We're not to be excused from trials and tribulations because that's one of the fastest learning curves. The goal is not a pleasant life and a beautiful life, but a spirit that has substance, a soul that has substance.
Well, they're certainly achieving that in the world right now. I mean, if pain is gain, then we're gaining quickly.
Yes. And you make the decisions. Are you going to help others and add sacrifice to yourself? And it's actions that count. It's not an intellectual decision. So therefore, this is inevitable. It's part of our solar system. Some evolving worlds have pole shifts. Most don't. And on worlds where this happens, denial and refusal to even think about it too horrific is a very common reaction. What you were describing, oh my gosh, let's just all go out, is the first reaction.
And your sisters.
Yes. Yes, it's, I totally sympathize when people write to me and say, how do I get my spouse or my family? I say, listen, I'm there. I got one person in my family who listens and thinks about it and connects. And the rest are either in denial or putting their heads in the sand or they don't want to hear it. And this is the first reaction, actually.
Does your sister think you're crazy?
No. No, she has actually taken a look at the evidence. I had a real hard time. I mean, we're dealing genius IQs, or near genius, right, gifted, and all around. And you can't get them to look at the evidence. It's, well, when I have time. And then finally they say, I don't want it because when I think about it, it makes my tummy hurt.
Yeah.
You know, you get this kind of stuff.
But, you know, there's no question. There have been sightings by observers. Do you know the Vatican has an observatory?
Yeah.
You do know about that.
I heard in Arizona. I'm not sure which one.
Yep.
They're all looking down toward Orion. Well, actually, it goes beyond the sightings. That was 2001. This January, there was two images made in infrared. One of them, and the interesting thing is, last November, the Zetas said the coordinates are going to change because, you know, between the 5th of January and the 19th, they're going to, like, drop in declination, but not really change in right angle. That's Ra and Dec, which is X and Y for astronomers, or maybe it's Y and X. Anyway, the one taken on the 5th was taken by a guy who lives somewhere in the southeast U.S. who calls himself open-minded. We don't know who he is. And he provided this graphic, and he said, okay, Nancy, where is it? That was the subject line in the PsyAstro Usenet.
Yes.
the Zetas had me draw a red circle, and it said it's within that red circle. So people did contrast and brightness changes, and here's this round blob coming out. And then on the 19th, of course, everybody's saying, it's noise. You know, it's part of an existing star. Well, it wasn't.
All right,
you know,
well, if this really exists, surely the Hubble, you know, if they wanted to point the Hubble where you told them to point it, or others have told them to point it, couldn't the Hubble find this rather easily?
Why do you think we don't get the direct feed off the Hubble, Arndt? You remember the moon missions where when one of the astronauts said, we're not the first, after that we never got direct feeds. It was a period of time. It got edited. We got little pieces.
I recall, yes.
Yes, well, the same thing is true of the Hubble. My goodness, the taxpayer pays for it.
In fact, actually, you know what, Nancy? I've got something on my website, STS 909 UFO on NASA Select TV, and the striking thing about this is, it looks like a piece of space junk to me, but here's this ongoing feed from NASA, and you can tell, you know, the camera on the shuttle focuses on this, whatever in the hell it is, tumbling in space, and you can tell that the guy doing the narration, who's talking about some spacewalk they're about to do or some function they're about to do, you can tell the guy is beginning to freak out. You know, his voice is beginning to change because he's seeing this on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 20 seconds later, you suddenly, the feed disappears and you go back to the typical shot of the control room.
Mm-hmm.
And when they finally go back to it again, no more shot of this tumbling, whatever the hell it is, and they're all of a sudden back to work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so obviously cut. I mean,
yeah.
It was obviously cut.
Yeah, here's the interesting thing. Here comes France taking an infrared shot on the 19th, and the blob is no longer where it was on the 5th. It's moved down to a new place. In declination it moved, but not in right angle. Now, on the 5th, where it is on the 19th, is nothing there. On the 19th, where it was on the 5th, is not there. These are both and the guy in France on the 19th got the original camera FITS file, which we've made available to the world. Interesting thing, when that broke the news in February, because they waited till they had all this information well in hand, and we had many copies around the globe, right?
Yes, yes.
Before we went forward with this announcement, a young astrophysics student was allowed to use the infrared equipment in Haute Province Observatory, and they weren't watching him. They thought, well, he's just a kid, he's just a student. And he took this terrific recording, and our French translator, Veronique, is a space mechanic and understands this and isn't. Anyway, NASA took away their NEAT, the NEAT program is looking for asteroids. It's the near-Earth asteroid and the dark objects in our solar system.
Yes.
We track over 1,000 of them.
That's correct, yes.
Their image of that part of the sky most recently taken, I think it was last December, disappeared from their website, and or what they had out there was a poor doctoring. They were doctoring in the blob that was there on the 19th.
Oh, my.
And Steve Hobson of Vancouver caught them at this. But anyway, the bottom line is, it wasn't there on the 5th where, you know, the...
All right, well, let me give you another... let's solicit another bottom line.
Okay.
If this object, whatever it is, Planet X, we'll call it, is coming our way, there is going to come a time when nobody can deny it anymore,
yes,
much as they would want to, like a comet seen in the night sky.
Yes.
As it grows in intensity, as it gets closer.
Yes. Seven weeks before the passage, you and I, without a telescope, will be able to go in our backyards, assuming that it's our night sky is pointed in the right direction.
And we'll see
right?
it coming.
And we'll see it coming.
All right. But back up from that. How about amateur telescope people? In other words, when will we have no longer deniability or pixel reorienting or anything? In other words, it'll get close enough that astronomers, even amateur astronomers, are going to be able to say, look, fools, there it is. We all see it. It'll be obvious to everybody. When will that be?
Well, the Zetas have said mid-2002. We're about there now. The
yes,
amateurs can see it. The problem is that Orion, or that location, is in the sun, meaning you'd have to look at the stars past the sun or around the sun, and of course you can't see stars. You certainly can't see some dim, diffuse, reddish, infrared object.
Right.
But I actually went into my sky map and plugged in different dates and places, and from what I can see, by late August, the hour before dawn, you might be able to spot it. But by September, it's a couple of hours before dawn. By December, from 8 o'clock in the evening until dawn, you can see it. So as the fall progresses, amateurs should be able to watch this. The ancients described it just before passage as a dragon, a fire dragon in the sky.
Yes.
Because this traveling planet has a number of moons that are in a swirl behind it. That whole thing has been described by the Zetas, why they don't orbit around it, but they end up in a swirl. And
well, they're finding almost any object. You know, asteroids capture things that orbit, even those we found recently. So that sounds logical.
Yeah, and they do a dance around each other. They don't really orbit each other, but they kind of do a swirling dance.
Yeah, that's right. Do we have any idea? Well, that is it's an attraction of sorts, of course. There's some gravity by mass. Now, do they have any idea of the mass of this thing?
Well, yes. Now, in 1983, in early 1980s, when they were going out looking for it, and they were frankly looking for it because the Zetas had told MJ-12 about it, where it was, what it was, Van Flandern said it was five times as big as the Earth. I suppose he was talking diameter. But the Zetas have said it's four times the diameter of Earth, but 23 times the mass.
That's big.
And in 1983, when they found it, when the infrared team, IRAS team, found it, it hit the Washington Post front page article that's on December 31st of 83, Planet X. And they said that we don't know if it's... Well, they described all the things it might be, and then the guy said... But we can say it's not inbound. I want to put as much cold water on that as I can. Well, how can he say it's not inbound if he doesn't know what it is?
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. You know, they talk about blue shift and red shift and all the rest of that. They probably don't know. But, you know, if this is coming, then all our lives, well, actually, the majority of our lives are going to end. And for those who remain, our lives will change. What's it going to be like after the passage for those who live?
Like camping. I advise, I've had young parents, parents of young children, and the first reaction is, well, let's just go out with the first wave. Well, you know, drowning is not painful. If you're fighting it, it's anxious, but if it's not painful. And, that was their first thought. I and the kids will just drown, you know. And then they changed their mind, and now they've learned what edible weeds are. I've seen a young mother walk around and feed her children lunch from the weeds at hand, and gone on the Tom Brown survival camping trip, learning how to get along in the woods, you know, and be comfortable with that, fishing. Actually, it's kind of fun to some extent, being challenged and finding that you can meet a challenge. And I speak from experience because I had a total paralysis when I was 23. It was a type of polio. And I couldn't lift a finger. And when I finally started getting my abilities back, I had to be very innovative and very resourceful. And I tell you, I had a lot more confidence about life after that because I found I could meet the challenge. I was creative. It's not necessarily a bad time. There's a lot of things wrong with the way we live on Earth. And I remind people, death is not the end. We are reincarnating spirits.
You're a cockeyed optimist, and that's fine. but there are people, you've got to understand, that have different mindsets. And, you know, believe it or not, there's people who don't like camping.
Yes.
And they really like the lifestyle they have right now, and yes, they will throw up their arms and just say, take me.
Yes. And the Zetas have said there's going to be a lot of partying, you know, because not only can you see it 7 weeks before the shift, but a week before, rotation of the Earth stops. And people say, oh, that, but folklore reports that. The long day that Joshua said the sun stood still in the sky.
Yes.
And Villikowski did a study and said, well, then on the other side of the world, well, the West Coast Indians report the long night when there was a lot of hurricane-force winds and huge waves and yada, yada. So the last passage was the Jewish Exodus.
A little bit of lore about three days of darkness, too.
Yeah, and it's not exactly 3 days. It's more like a week, but people say, well, they'd roast and freeze, but that's not true. The oceans continue to, and the atmosphere continues to circulate, so the temperature change is not that extreme. But if the rotation stops within a day, and it does so because this big magnet coming up from the south grips the Atlantic Rift, which is highly magnetized, a lot of iron ore, most recently ripped, most recent amount of, and it holds it, and then it grabs the bulge of Brazil and whoops up to the North Pole, etc. That happens in an hour. And you can actually tell that because the stars would start jiggling and things would start to move rapidly. That's when you lay down in your trench, and hurricane force winds and Richter 9 earthquakes worldwide. Richter is based on scope. So when they say Richter 15, they mean the whole, every plate in the world. Boom, boom. You know, all the cities will become dust. You know, the bridges will go down. You know, we were not going to have electricity. You have to, but you know what? You can rig a windmill from car parts.
Well, a lot of things you can do.
Oh, yes. And the Trouble Time site details this.
But what, will there be an equal mix of good and bad people that are destroyed?
I would have to say that the mix will probably end up about the same.
Well, if that's true, then we've got Mad Max world for a while.
Well, to some degree, but there's going to be some intervention as we progress. In other words, the bad guys may not find the camps of good people. They just might not see them. You've heard of contactees saying, well, I saw an owl, or I saw a deer in the wood. Is screen memory. You think you see something, but it's something different than what you really saw. And also, we advise groups of good-hearted people to be very low profile. The Mad Max gangs do not survive long term, contrary to what our movies tell us. They loot, and when they can't loot anymore, they starve and freeze and kill each other off. And they have a tendency to kill each other off anyway. So they don't last that long. And the good-hearted people are going to continue to grow because good-hearted souls are going to be allowed to incarnate. And some good-hearted encampments...
Well, there's going to have to be, then, divine intervention because, historically, the weak are downtrodden and enslaved in that kind of situation, and you would have a sort of a society of warlords, and all of history, unless there's divine intervention, would suggest there would be fiefdoms and kingdoms and dictators and sort of a Mad Max world, and that those people, those violent people, would rule for at least a time unless there was some sort of great intervention.
Yes, there is. The intervention is that the bad souls will not incarnate back, but the good souls will, and also the hybrids that are being genetically engineered and living elsewhere,
yes,
will set up communities. And they have said that, in fact, some good-hearted people will say, well, we've got these new neighbors, and they look kind of weird. They're bald. They don't really speak. But they gave me this nifty battery that just doesn't seem to run out.
And they have small breasts.
Yeah. But you know, they said that in times of trouble like this, where your whole world literally turns upside down, you're not going to start worrying about, you're not going to get anxious about, you know, about weird-looking neighbors. And so there's going to be an inflooding of all the good-hearted people. There's as many spirits and other life forms in attendance here that are almost entirely good-hearted as there are incarnating souls on Earth.
Do they believe in God?
Yes, they do.
Do they believe in Lucifer?
Well, actually, yeah, the devil actually existed. Not what they've said is heaven and hell is not really a place. Hell is living with the reform school, having to go and Saddam Hussein has to live with Hitler, and you can imagine that. You know, they've described that as leveling wars in which it's just all out hack at your brother until you finally establish the pecking order.
Well, you know, that's how Australia started out, but they're okay now.
Well, yes, some of these people go to reform school and emerge and say, I've made the wrong choice. I don't want to be self-centered anymore. You know, that's what they have to do, or they're stuck there forever. So, let's see, where were we?
I'll tell you,
devil was actually a life form that had very hot skin, and he was in attendance by three little people who held spikes, and that's why they have this three-pronged fork thing associated with him.
All right, hold it right there. We're at the top of the hour. Fortunately, we seem to have cured our phone woes by you going down to the lowest connection in your house, the one not hit by lightning. Figures. Nancy Leader is my guest. Zeta Talk is her game. I'm Art Bell.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Boy, you know, it's really interesting to think about in a lot of ways. Mark from Phoenix, Arizona says a psychic named Ruth Montgomery, oh, I know her well, predicted that the number of survivors after the pole shift would number only in the millions, which I imagine would be about 10% of the population, now 6 billion. That could easily be so. You know, it's interesting to think about if all of this should be true. If Planet X is getting ready to make its swing back as early as a year, that's not very long, huh? So it provokes, brings on many changes, as the song from MASH said. The theme from MASH, remember that? Many changes. And you can take or leave them as you please, but not here. So it'll be an interesting human study. It certainly would be interesting to live through. And so I guess in a way I'm saying that when it got really right down to it, despite what I might say now, sort of half joking, I think I'd try to be one of the survivors. I'm just that type A. I'd dig a hole. I'd dig a hole. How about you? We're about to go to the phones with Nancy Leader, and I'm sure you've got a lot of questions about Planet X. I sure do, and the Zeta Reticulans. I'm not exactly sure the way that should be said. Is that right, Nancy?
It sounds good to me. They don't actually go by that. And of course, that's our name for them.
Yes.
You know. They don't even have names. They're so telepathic, they don't need names.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Are they... You know, a lot of people think that if you're telepathic and there's a telepathic society, it would be almost like the Hive Society. In other words, there would be so much connection between people that it would be more of a hive. We have such an individual society right now in America. We're all very... serious individuals, and we seem to treasure that, but you know, the telepathy sounds more like the hive than us.
Well, there's certainly more information flow, and they said that's always a shock. You know, when we incarnate into our next form, Art, and we're aware that everybody else can read our thoughts, it's kind of a shock. You know, there's not so much privacy, but as far as difference of opinion, that does not go away.
So there remains individuality.
Oh, I'll give you an instance. How often do people report there were three aliens that visited me? Why the three? Because three breaks a tie. If you have a difference of opinion between two, the third weighs in and breaks the tie. And when they're out and about in the universe, far away from anybody else, like they can't go in front of a panel or, you know, get some guidelines, and they encounter a new situation, they say, well, what should we do with this? So they obviously don't think alike.
How many other abductees have you met? Many?
I know by email of a number of people that I'm getting told are legitimate. But in my family, well, I do know that all three of my children were contactees.
Okay. You have so much detail, Nancy, that if you were to encounter another abductee, wouldn't you be able to tell relatively quickly if they were on the level?
Yeah. Yeah, and I also have the advantage of being able to, like, I kind of chat with the Zetas all the time, you know, on a subliminal level, and I can tell people, but, you know, I don't take those kind of questions by email because that's all I would do. In 1997, I gave up what I call personal counseling. Am I really a contactee? And let me tell you my story, and that's all I do.
All right, well, do you want to give out your email address?
Actually, it's on the website, and there's a click on the left-hand side, Contact Nancy. It's a web form. You can send me a message, no attachments. We live in the virus age.
Oh, we do. Yes. Probably a fifth of my emails full of these.
Oh.
You know, they're idiots, too, because they're so obviously viruses, and
yeah.
They're not hidden it well at all.
Yeah. The virus has certain stamps. I know I delete tons of them. I have the Searcam and the Clean Z. And every day, tons of them. Fortunately, I don't get it.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? If you just don't open the attachments, it doesn't happen. And
that's right.
If I get a JPEG, I'll open that. But other than that, forget it. I mean, when it says, my beautiful wife, and then you look inside, it says wife.exe. You know, only a totally a regressed human being would open such a thing. But, you know, we got a lot of them. All right, let's do it. First time caller line, you're on the air with Nancy Leader. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi. You're on the air, dear.
This is Nancy.
Right. I know. But there's supposed to be... There's someone
another
on...
person.
Yes, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, you are there. Hallelujah.
How you doing?
We're doing.
Okay. This is David calling from Logan, Utah.
Yes, David.
And, I've enjoyed your show quite a lot. I find it much more entertaining than the Rush Limbaugh show.
Well, it's different.
Yeah.
I mean, we're real different.
Well, I like it. It's much more intriguing and entertaining. Anyway, I got a question for Nancy. I got a friend up in Montana who is just one of those amateur astronomers who claims he has found Planet X. But some people are also claiming that it could be a black comet.
Mm-hmm.
One of those kind of comets that doesn't even, that you can't see the trail or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But is it possible that this Planet X might be actually heading our way since it is getting bigger?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it definitely is. And in early 2001, it was visible at an observatory. They magnify what you're looking at, and they also are usually located and have scopes that try to avoid light pollution and the like. And so, therefore, before that, if you went to an observatory, you couldn't see it, which is why in 1983 they had to loft an infrared balloon up above the atmosphere. And this year, we're able to image it in infrared, and you can also go and look at it, but you still needed an observatory in January. By August, September, et cetera, you should be able to see it in an amateur scope. If he's looking at it now, whatever he's looking at, he's not seeing what the Zetas are pointing to as Planet X because it's in the sun, meaning you have to look at it during the day, past the sun, not in the night sky.
Mm.
So that's a clue. I always say to people, what is the Ron deck? I mean, where are you looking? And if it doesn't compare to the X and Y in the sky that the Zetas are pointing to, then that's not what they're
which
looking at.
Which is on
else.
Your website, right?
Absolutely.
All right. We've got a link to Nancy's website. Hey, Nancy, if it got down to weeks or months, assuming we might have months notification because of all the astronomers who couldn't keep it secret anymore if this thing is really coming. I mean, you know, it's, at some point it's going to be obvious. So is partying down rational or irrational from your point of view?
Oh, as a personal point of view, I guess if I felt that I didn't have people depending on me and I couldn't help other people and that my life was going to be a misery, partying down and just going out with it would be not an unreasonable approach to take. A lot of people would do that, though, just because they don't know what else to do. And the Zetas have said they feel people should have a choice. In particular, they've said it's not so much rational or irrational as maybe irresponsible. If you know this is coming and you have a skill set and can help other people, it's almost like, what about the little orphans? Think of all the children whose parents are going to die. Imagine this toddler standing over a dead mother and father, broken arm, crying, and here's a hungry dog pack circling it. I mean, it's just heart-wrenching. So if you can help in that situation, you should. A lot of people have written me and said, well, you know, I need kidney dialysis. I'm not going to live, and I know it. You know,
well, it doesn't sound like there's going to be a big calling for talk show hosts immediately. I mean, right, so...
Well, shortwave is the way to go, Art, because shortwave communication will survive. You can use atmosphere, ionosphere bounce, moon bounce. It is the community, and you can even move graphics.
You know about all that, huh? Well, yeah.
Well, we have. That's very big. That's one of the solution sets, by the way. Yeah.
I think shortwave is incredibly important. In any disaster, catastrophic situation, oh, my, that's the only way. And you can prove that because when hurricanes come in and all communication ceases, phone lines go down, satellite hookups are useless, all the modern community, the internet's, everything's down. There's one communication getting through, and that's ham operators and shortwave, and that's it. And in that kind of situation, that would be it.
And you know, you can buy these things where you grind by a handle, you know, and kind of crank up the battery and then do shortwave.
We've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's definitely worldwide, it will be the medium. And the Zetas have said, talk about divine intervention. Where if you don't have hilltop-to-hilltop kind of antenna bouncing,
yes,
you're going to say, oh, for some reason I'm talking to somebody in Europe or China, and I don't know how that happened, but you're going to get help.
Well, that gives me a little hope. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nancy Leader. Hello.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning.
I'm David in Tampa.
Yes, sir.
I have a brief comment for your guest, and then I have a question. First of all, there is no evidence to sustain that this planet has ever entered the solar system and any damage has been done because of it in past history. If you go back 3,657 years, 3,657 before that, and on and on and on. My point is, if it was going to happen now, it would have happened before.
And it did.
Well, all right, did it happen 3,657 years ago?
Indeed it did. Now, what you should remember is a record-keeping goes to heck during these times. You don't have, but we do have a record. The last passage was the Jewish Exodus, estimated to be 1,628 years before Christ, which is, you know, but it's an estimate because the Egyptian census-taking just everything went to heck. What exactly discombobulated the Egyptians so badly that all the Jews, their slaves, left the lame, the little old ladies? And what caused the Red Sea to heave so that the floor moved up? You know, and they had the red blood of, or the blood-red appearance of the rivers and the like.
Well, Moses with God's hand, they would say.
Well, yeah, well, that's the way he described it. He was certainly in touch. Moses was a high service to other human who was constantly reaching out for help for his people. But I
take your point. I mean, if that happened, you could make a case that the only thing that could do that would be that kind of planetary influence.
And take another look from a different angle. Daly did a study in the early, around 1950, found that all the oceans around the world, the water had dropped 16 to 20 feet worldwide.
Oh, no, that's true because we have seashells here in the desert.
Yeah, well,
that's why we call it the desert of the sea. It's a little cutism, but it's really true. The sea one time was here. Right, caller?
I suppose. I wasn't there, so I couldn't really say.
But recently, within the last 3,000 to 4,000 years, 3,500 years ago approximately, the oceans of the world dropped 16 to 20 feet worldwide. Take a look at how heavy with ice Greenland is. It's covered with ice.
Right.
What about wandering poles and ice ages? If you take a close examination, you find that the crust moved. It wasn't that suddenly a big chunk of ice descended on Wisconsin or Finland or something. And what about the mastodon up there in the polar circle? They were frozen so that the meat stayed fresh. In other words, they didn't thaw since the day of their freezing.
This is all true.
And they can do dating. The last, they found about 3,500 years ago or so, they were frozen and then they jumped back. There is a track jumping back 3,600 years, and we do have that, some of that information on the website.
So
the crust moved.
Then there is plenty of evidence that at that time.
Oh, yes.
Why?
People look at the puzzle in pieces, Art. They say, well, we've got the frozen mastodons. Well, we had ice ages or wandering poles. They don't put all the pieces together because they have no answer for that. So this Zeta Talk has put all this together with an explanation that makes sense.
Okay,
it's very scary.
If you know about this and our government is aware, then what are their plans? I mean, here we are proceeding with these trivial pursuits of killing Taliban and grieving about the attack on America and what may yet come and worried about that and all the rest. I mean, trivial compared to what you're talking about. If a planet or a body of whatever it is going to come this close and kill 9 out of 10 people, I'd say that's right on up there. And the government by now certainly knows about it if Nancy Leader does.
Yes, they definitely know about it. And people at Kokomo, Indiana, will tell you that the Kokomo hum is related because they're burrowing in there, making an underground. Mount Weather used to be the place of choice, but it's too close to the coast.
So, Nancy, you're telling me the Kokomo hum is the government burrowing in, and maybe even the Taos hum.
Yep. Yes, indeed. And they do mean to move inland away from the coast and have what they call a carry-on government.
Well, you know, I don't have my invitation yet. Do you?
The problem with this is that they're going to emerge from their bunkers and say, thank goodness we, your government, have survived to help you. And what are the taxes going to be? Give me that bag of rice and beans that you have, and that's your taxes. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
People are going to say, well, where were you? You let us know at the very last minute, if at all. Right? And yet you stocked up for yourselves. There are rumors that the military is stashing meals ready to eat in caves and trucks. And, but, you know, this never works.
The government is going to come out with their hand out.
Oh, yeah. Well, sure. You know, and it's going to be. But, you know, you have to figure it's not going to run like it does today. The military is not going to operate. The soldiers are going to go AWOL. They're going to worry about their families.
Sure.
And the problem with even the rich hiring a militia, a private militia, and saying, well, we've got our enclave and we have enough food to last for 50 years. And what do you suppose these mercenaries are going to do as soon as they realize they can't be called to account? No police force, no courts. They're going to take over.
I told you, Mad Max.
Yeah, yeah.
I see that happening at least for a while.
Yes, indeed. And the rich and those, the powerful in their enclaves, are going to be the worst off in this regard because the mercenaries are going to turn the tables and just take over.
Would that be the meek inheriting?
Yes. Yes. The little guy, and we always advise people, don't meet people over the internet. Don't move to the other side of the world or the country or whatever with strangers. Don't give strangers your money. People you know that you work with and family, form small groups, keep a low profile.
All right, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. This is Coast.
Dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach out at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach out on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Well, you know what? It occurred to me that this whole Planet X scenario coming in on such short notice would make one hell of an open line topic, wouldn't it? How about we do an open line topic on this coming Friday night? I mean, what would you do? And wouldn't it be interesting to hear what people would do if they really determined this was upon us, and it won't be very long either, but it sure would make a very interesting open line topic. Maybe this coming Friday. What do you think? You know, the more I think about it, the more to contemplate this scenario and throw it into open lines and just see what people would do. What do you think? What kind of open line show do you think that would be, Nancy?
I think it would be excellent. There's so many different scenarios, so many different each is individual. And there's people who are trying to figure out how they would live, what this might mean. Houseboat living is a great one.
Well, I imagine I would get people who would want to be warlords, who would want to be leaders. Perhaps violent leaders would be a necessity. I mean, you'd go back to the law of the jungle, basically, right?
And take a look at the Terminator gene. Recently we had Monsanto was producing seed that would not reproduce itself.
That's
the seed
correct.
Would be sterile. Why do you suppose that is?
I don't know.
Can you imagine Monsanto being the warlord or people like that saying, well, you can't grow your crops, but if you come and work for us as serfs, then we'll give you seed that works. Terrible.
Well, you really think that's what it is?
Well, that was an attempt. It didn't work.
It might be, even in today's economy.
Yes.
It might be economically advantageous to have the Terminator thing in there so that every season for, you know, Planet X or not, you've got to go back and buy a new seed. I mean...
Yes, I think that was the way it was put out, but if you look behind it, it would be a very nifty way of achieving kingdom and serfdom arrangements.
All right, here we go. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nancy Leader. Good morning. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, East of the Rockies, you're on the air now or never.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello? Yes, East of the Rockies, me?
Yes.
Yeah, Hi. I have two questions. I'd like to know if either you or your guests have heard of the Residence C, which is a great big boat, which has been built for rich people, very, very luxurious. And if hopefully Mr. Bell or your guests have an idea to go there, because I know all your fans, if we don't survive, we sure would like you to survive.
Well, let me reiterate. Number one, I haven't heard of it. Number two, I definitely haven't been invited, nor do I have enough money to get on it anyway. So what about you, Nancy? Have you heard of this?
Well, I heard about a big luxury liner and that wealthy people would buy condos on it for like millions of dollars each.
Really?
But this is big boats like that are not going to fare all that well because of the hurricane force winds. The tides that move are going to be mostly flood tides. It's not a giant wave crashing down. It's like it comes up the house, up to the roof, keeps rising, that kind of a thing, a flood tide. But so I think that houseboat living after the shift is going to be very nifty. As the poles melt, you can actually just pull up the anchor and move along with the coastline. You don't like your neighbors, you move. And ocean fishing is going to be very good. So this is actually a survival technique I find quite appealing myself.
Do you ever see Waterworld?
Yeah. Think about the movies we're seeing. Deep Impact, Waterworld, a volcano in the middle of L.A., this kind of stuff.
Armageddon. A good point. I mean, you really think they're adjusting us to what's coming?
No question.
Well, I wrote a book called The Coming Global Superstorm.
Yes.
Based on the weather changes and a lot of things that we see coming. It was half reality, half projected reality. I now say instead of fiction because we've moved into that area. They're making a movie out of that.
Wow.
And wow. So maybe we are being conditioned in a way, and maybe I'm contributing to that.
Yes, I'm sure you are.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nancy Leader. Hello. Hello there, West of the Rockies. My fault this time. I didn't push the button. Now you're on the air. Hello.
Can you hear me, Art?
I hear you.
Jim from Northern California.
Yes, Jim.
I have I've worked for the Defense Department for 48 years, and I have some fast questions for this lady.
Ask away, sir.
Number one, she said that you have to be 200 foot above sea level, and yet she said the sea would come up 600 feet.
Yes, we're talking about the difference between the pole shift itself is dealing with the ocean level where it is today.
Well, the Defense Department has calculated that the ocean, if you melt all the poles and the Greenland ice cap, would only come up 325 feet.
That's right. And the difference, the Zetas have explained, is that everything will heat up. Right now we have a lot of El Ninos, and that comes from underneath Indonesia, where there's undersea volcanoes heating the ocean water. So if you had all the plates moving and crashing into each other and the core of the world swirling, you know, because it's done this magnetic turn, all that heat rises up through the crust and the world becomes warmer and ocean water will swell when warm, and that makes the difference.
Well, your comments, a lot of them, especially the comment regarding people changing from one existence to another.
Reincarnating, I think.
Reincarnating.
Say, yeah.
You see, this here is what for the Bible refers to doctrines of demons. Because if you reincarnate and go from one status to another, the same as they teach in the Hindu and all the other religions, then you have absolutely no need for a savior, because the savior come to save and seek the lost from death.
Yeah, so in other words, you find what she's saying to be an affront to your religious beliefs, sir, right?
No, to the biblical teachings.
Well, okay, and your faith, right?
That's correct.
Okay, and, well, I thought so. That's fair enough. What about that? I mean, there's a lot of people like that man, Nancy, who have a very strong faith. Faith, you know, something that you believe in, but you can't prove.
Yes, and it is difficult, especially when you're, all religions of the world have a valid basis and violently disagree with each other. The Zetas have said that Jesus was indeed an immaculate conception, and was from someplace else, a very service to other oriented, and so was Muhammad, and so was Buddha, and thereafter their message got twisted. So that what you have, for instance, in the Catholic Church with its difficulties today, rest in gold and the like, this is not as Jesus taught. So there's a lot of changes in interpretations of the Bible and interpretations of the word of Jesus that is not what he intended.
Okay. First time caller line, you're on the air with Nancy Leader. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Hi, this is Joe. I'm calling you from East Los Angeles, KFI.
East LA, okay.
And I have a question. First of all, whatever happened to Noah's promise God gave him, but second of all, there was something in the Bible stating that when you see things like this coming about, to head for the wilderness. So what I'm trying to ask from you is, right now, the way the law is written, the U.S. government forbids citizens to use caves and maybe go into forests. I just want your opinion about that. And let me see if I can understand the question. So what you're telling me about the shift is that the North and South Pole will become our equators?
Yes, they will both be under the new equator. And I do have, if you go onto my website and click on the pole shift section, there's a new geography discussion that has a map. And you can actually print that out and trim the white paper away and glue it on a ball, and that's your new globe.
Is Alaska a good place to go?
Alaska will be very tropical. The big problem with Alaska is the bears. Man and bears are going to be fighting, and you know, if you get rid of the bears, it's going to be very tropical. The permafrost is already mushy.
Actually, the permafrost is mushy right now. It is slowly but surely thawing.
Yes.
The changes are amazing. God, what's going on in the world right now is amazing. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Nancy Leader. Hello.
Hello. Nice to talk to you guys.
Thank you. Where are you?
This is James here in Phoenix.
Okay.
When I used to live in Europe, there were all kinds of gargoyles up there. I mean, they were so cool, but they were so freaky to look at, too.
Gargoyles?
Yes, sir. I heard
you mean statues of gargoyles?
Well, that's what I was wondering. I heard that on that other planet, they're gargoyle-like people. I was wondering if these ones might be in hibernation or something.
Well, you're right about one thing. He is. All over Europe, there are statues of gargoyles. I mean, they're everywhere. They're very common. And I suppose that you would suggest, Nancy, that these are
past life forms that somebody saw, like the Book of the Vedas from India. Could I have the Zetas answer that? I personally don't know.
Ask.
All right, here's Zeta Talk. Indeed, this does represent a life form, similarly to the dragons that are in folklore from China to Europe. These were creatures that were brought down by service-to-self entities hoping to terrorize humans and thus increase their harvest of minions during this transformation period. They preferred high perches. They are not dissimilar from the chupacabras in South America. They are not allowed to actually attack people, but to terrorize them. They might be considered a dog pack of the evil minions from elsewhere in the universe who hope to terrorize you into selfish thoughts and behavior. Resist this. They die out because they are not native to the earth, as the dragons died out and were killed off. Vampires are another such onslaught of mankind in the past. We have this on Nancy's website and suggest you read this to get oriented. And this is the end of Zeta Talk.
So that was straight from them.
Yeah, I put words to their concept.
All right.
Yes.
All right. This might seem a silly question, but to a lot it isn't. In America right now, we're coming up on about 2 million odd prisoners locked up in our system. RJ from Fontana, California would like to know, will they die in their cells or be turned loose on society?
Most likely die in their cells. This is an individual thing in the hands of man, as are nuclear facilities, like nuclear power plants. There may be people that go and deactivate the power plant so there isn't any spewing and pollution. Our nuke warheads, in fact, between America and Russia, we have far fewer than is being reported, because there is a technique to deactivate. And I've watched the Zetas present this to MJ-12, and they had a radioactive tub, the wand thing, you know, was passed over it, very radioactive, and then they poured a chemical in there, and then within seconds there was no radioactivity, because bottom line, it's a chemical reaction, and they've given this to the U.S. and Russia.
I was going to say, we could sure use that technology, because they're getting ready to truck all this waste across the country to Yucca Mountain in about 10 years or whatever it is, and we're not looking forward to that.
I imagine. So that actually, something like a prison, if you had the guards let them go, then they'd be loose. If you had the guards run for the hills, then they'd die.
And which is more likely? Probably the guards are going to run for the hills, huh?
I would. It depends. If you wanted a Mad Max gang, that sure would be a nifty way to start.
Sure would. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nancy Leader. Hello.
Hello, this is Steve in Shreveport.
Yes, sir.
I'm a security chief, and I guess that would make me a creditable observer. I spotted a UFO about 6 months ago, relatively close range. What I'd like to ask the guest is, the Zetas that you referred to, is that the same thing as a gray?
Yeah, they're often referred to as grays, although the Zetas say that you cannot see all the colors. We have a very limited color range, and so when you say, oh, it was gray, you just didn't see the color, you know.
Well, we've seen a limited spectrum, certainly.
That's right. So they can be referred to as the grays. They get a lot of bad disinformation. Every life form, every species, every planet that has evolved souls has a small percentage that become bad guys, and they have been around, and there have been one or two that have visited Earth and given a bad impression. MJ-12 started out being introduced to the bad guys, and then the good guys, that was what the crash at Roswell was all about. They were trying to say, by being seeming hopeless and injured, to try to make the people come and talk to them more as an introduction. The bad guys made a better first impression, but eventually MJ-12 understood there were two different kinds. All you have to do as a human is say no, get out of here, I want nothing to do with you. They can't affect you. It's a psychological ploy. So the grays, there's a section within the government, or a section of the ufology people, that say they're all evil, don't talk to them, they're out to take you over, they eat you, they chop you up and throw you in vats, and there's a terrible disinformation campaign. If that were the case, then why haven't we been taken over? Where's the mass landing? It's not happening.
I think you may have unwittingly become insightful on this, because that's what I was going to ask. Is I'm getting the impression that you think of them as our benevolent space brothers, but I'd sure like to know what they make of like what happened to, you know, Captain Thomas Mantell. I mean, I think they had a hand in his demise. I think they've had a hand in some other human deaths. And so I really don't see that. Perhaps they're neutral, but I'm not getting the impression that they really care that much about us.
Well, actually, there's a lot of disinformation about what goes on. I mean, some of it is based on truth. But they cannot affect people. They cannot hurt you unless you actually wanted that to happen, unless you gave permission.
Huh.
And even those stories that are spread are otherwise.
I see.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nancy Leader. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Ernie from Lake Forest, California, listening to you on KFI out of L.A.
KFI 640. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I have three questions for your guest concerning Planet X.
Fire away.
One, is the planet a solid object like Earth or a gas giant like Jupiter?
Okay.
And two, does it orbit the Sun in the same direction as all the other planets, or does it orbit in an opposite direction?
And good questions.
Pause for a second. Earth type or solid or gas giant or what?
It's like Earth. It's not a gas giant, and it actually is a smoldering brown dwarf we're used to thinking of brown dwarfs as being huge gaseous things because that's what we can see out there. But actually, there's a variation across the spectrum as to just when something, quote, lights. It exudes light through the rifts and in its ocean. It has an atmosphere, and it actually supports life. Second, the orbit is outside of human astrophysics. The humans say, oh, such an orbit can't exist. Well, of course, every once in a while we're saying, whoops, humans were wrong, we now know. So the orbit is like a sling orbit. It goes more like a railroad track, but past one of the suns that it orbits, and then it turns around and comes back, zoom, past that sun. And we have a binary sun, a dead sun that our Earth is a twin of, and they both are stationary in space, fixed there. The dithering has stopped, no dance going on. And this guy slings back and forth and every 3,657 years. It makes a very rapid passage. It picks up speed. It comes zooming past our sun, goes about a quarter of the way past. It sits there for 3 years or so, then turns around and comes zooming back, mm-hmm. and then sits between the two suns for almost all of its orbital period.
So almost pendulum-like.
Yes, exactly. Very good description.
Boy, you know, we have just chewed up the time, Nancy. We're going to have you back. Your website is zetatalk.com, right?
Yes, Z-E-T-A-T-A-L-K. .com.
We've got links there and to your other websites, and all I can say is thank you so very, very much for appearing tonight.
It's been my pleasure and honor, and I'm looking forward to coming back.
We'll do that. Thank you, Nancy.
Bye-bye now.
Good night. And she might have just really lit up a topic for Friday night, Saturday morning. I'd be interested in hearing from some of you in email, artbell@mindspring.com. That's how you get to me, artbell@mindspring.com. And tell me what you think a show like that would be if we jumped ahead and said, all right, Planet X is a reality. It's going to be here in 2003. We're going to know about it months ahead of time. What are you going to do? How interesting would that be? From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night.